Hello, Internet friend. I'm David Revelle, and this is ValueSide for Monday, May 22nd. For all of our articles and podcasts, visit ValueSide.com. Well, today, audit the Fed. Would it surprise you to know that one of the largest institutions in this country does not adhere to generally accepted accounting standards? Would you be even more surprised to learn that this institution is the chief regulator of the major banks in the country? I know it sounds crazy, but the institution that we're talking about is the Federal Reserve, our country's central banker. This is a real case of the king has no clothes, a situation where a tradition has been allowed to stand without bringing the Fed's financial reports up to current standards. And I'm giving the Fed the benefit of the doubt here. I'll let those of you of a more cynical persuasion decipher their motive. Accounting standards are the bedrock upon which our entire financial system is based. Take away those standards, and the chances of deception and deceit increase dramatically. In recent history, we've had several examples of the dangers of a lack of objective accounting reports. Examples of firms that have cooked the book, including the great Asian financial crisis of the 1990s, where various countries in Asia failed to provide the framework of objective accounting. Or Enron, here in the United States, which created one of the most significant accounting frauds in our history. Or most recently, the apparent corruption of Samuel Bankman-Fried and the FTX crypto exchange. In each of those cases, proper audits would have revealed the level of corruption and deceit, and if rigorously administered, they would have prevented the great loss of capital and investment. As any accountant will attest, an audit needs to consist of two parts at least. The balance sheet, that's a delineation of what the company or entity owns and owes, and the income statement, the register of income and expenses. With those two schedules, the balance sheet and income statement, an excellent picture is painted of that organization. Now, two other schedules are often included in a complete financial report, and those are a schedule of change in equity, that's ownership, and a cash flow report, that's a detailed record of the use and distribution of funds. However, today we're looking at just the first two sections of a financial report, the income statement, sometimes called a profit and loss statement, and the balance sheet. These are the two most basic parts of the financial statement, and no financial statement is complete without these two sections. Now, the audited part comes in when a disinterested third party, almost always an accountant, reviews the financial report and issues a statement indicating either that the financial statement accurately reflects the entity's financial position, or it does not accurately reflect their financial position. And yes, I have sometimes seen financial reports where the auditor says that the report is not accurately representing the underlying financial situation. It's rare, but it does happen. So with that background, let's look at the financial reporting done by the Federal Reserve. Every Thursday afternoon, the Federal Reserve provides the, quote, Federal Reserve balance sheet, factors affecting reserve balances. It's report H.4.1. As we already know, this report could not be a financial statement. While it is considered the Fed's balance sheet, at least that's how Wall Street sees it, there is at least the implication that there may be assets outside these reserve balances. And we don't know that there are, and I won't quibble here, but there's no income statement. And without an income statement, this report does not meet even a minimum qualification to be a financial statement. Now, the Federal Reserve simply does not provide the source or use of funds, the income statement. It never has, and unless you and I demand it, I suspect that it never will. Now, in lieu of providing a real financial report, the Fed uses a very clever ploy. This H.4.1 report is just a report on the factors affecting reserve balances. Thereby, the Fed portrays itself as a mere custodian of bank reserves, as if they are holding these assets for the benefit of someone else, in this case the nation's commercial banks. While that's true in a very limited sense, we need to recognize that the Fed owns these assets, and as the owner, the Fed is entitled to receive any interest or dividend paid by these bills, notes, bonds, and agencies of the U.S. government. This is the part where it really gets interesting. Follow the money. Because since 2008, the amount of Fed assets has exploded. In response to the great financial crisis of 2008, the Fed went on a buying spree, the biggest buying spree in history. By regulation, the Fed is allowed to only purchase U.S. government-backed bills, notes, and bonds, and some agencies. As a result of the financial crisis, the Fed's need for additional assets, the Fed was also permitted to purchase mortgage-backed securities like those issued by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Now, before the 2008 crisis, the Fed owned less than a trillion of these assets. By 2020, just 3 years ago, they had expanded to $4 trillion in assets. And then, after the COVID pandemic and the issuance of all those stimulus payments, the Fed now owns $8 trillion in assets. Well, just what happened? Very briefly, here is a recap of what the Fed and the U.S. Treasury's strategy through these two financial crises. During the first financial crisis, some of the banks, including Citibank, were on the brink of failure. Without a bailout, they might cause the entire system to crash. These banks needed cash, and they needed cash immediately. The administration agreed to bail out the banks by issuing new treasury bonds, bonds that would be purchased by the Federal Reserve in a complex transaction that is called monetizing the debt. It's where the country's monetary authority, the Fed, purchases the country's own bonds. And just like that, the Fed's balance sheet jumped from less than a trillion to over $4 trillion. But we're not done. Next came the COVID-19 pandemic. This time, the financial crisis was more widespread. Although the banks were not affected this time, interest rates were still low and spreads still high, many corporations and private individuals, however, were severely impacted. The Biden administration decided to use the same strategy as used in 2008. Just send checks to everyone and again monetize that debt. In other words, have the Federal Reserve buy more bonds and put more cash into the system. Again, instantly the Fed's balance sheet doubled from $4 trillion to nearly $9 trillion. Now, before we begin to feel sorry for the Fed having to buy all that debt, let's keep a couple of things in mind. While the Federal Reserve has expended a tremendous amount of money, it was not money they earned flipping hamburgers at McDonald's. Remember, the Fed is the nation's monetary authority. Those Federal Reserve notes in our wallets all come from the Fed. If the Fed needs cash, it just prints it. To purchase all those treasuries, the Fed just created the funds. The money base was expanded by $9 trillion to buy those bonds and notes. That's how our nation's debt is monetized. Which brings us at last to that missing income statement, the one the Fed refuses to disclose. All of those treasuries pay interest. Each bond, note, and T-bill, along with all the agencies, all pay interest. If you own a treasury bond, as you know, you too receive an interest payment. Now today, the Federal Reserve earns the interest on nearly $8 trillion in bonds, notes, and agencies. And while we can't see how much of their actual interest income is, we can make an educated guess and at least get a ballpark estimate of what their income might be. Now, as you know, interest rates are rising. Currently, treasuries with 1 year or less maturity have yields of greater than 5%, while maturities more than a year have yields of roughly 4%. So all of the treasuries that the Fed is purchasing today have yields between 4 and 5%. But remember, some of the treasuries the Fed purchased back in 2008 may have only had a fractional yield. So let's assume that if we add up all the income from all the old treasuries at low yield and all the newly purchased treasuries with high yield, on average, let's say they produce a 1% yield. It's a guess, but we're likely in the ballpark. Now, at 1% yield on their treasury portfolio, including those mortgage-backed securities, the Fed would receive $80 billion per year. To put that number in perspective, only two companies in American history, Apple Computer and Berkshire Hathaway, have ever had that kind of net income for a year. But the Federal Reserve earns that kind of money every year from their incredible portfolio of U.S. Treasuries. That's not including the additional income the Fed may make from fees, charges, and other ancillary services. Finally, remember that the Fed's income is directly tied to the interest they receive on their portfolio of U.S. Treasuries. The higher interest rates go, the higher the Fed's income. Potentially today, with these higher interest rates, the Fed's income could be 3 or 4 times higher than the $80 billion of our guesstimate. And oh yes, who sets those higher interest rates? Why, that's right, the Federal Reserve. And that's the value side for Monday, May 22nd. For all of our articles and podcasts, visit valueside.com. I'm David Revelle. ValueSide is independently written and researched. The views expressed are strictly my own.